This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of July 8th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a hot and sticky Saturday evening is my buddy Jim Allen. What's up, dude?
Got to pronounce that sticky.
Sticky or thicky?
And well, when I was a boy, it would have come out as thicky because I had a lisp, but endless work with a therapist cured me of that. So anyway, I'm doing well.
You're the right therapist, apparently.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, when I give you a hand signal, there won't be any lisp.
Oh, is that all you can come back with? People, he's making gestures. How unprofessional. Way to start me. The podcast.
I know. It's all love. Okay.
We'll get you a therapist, see if they can fix that finger for you. A physical the therapist.
Yeah, it's the one that won't bend.
Man. All right. Let's get to it. On this week's show, we've got DeNA pitcher Andre Jackson. We talk about the Bay Stars, the Fighters, take a look at the top performers of June, spend a moment on the Tatsunami Ogasawara stink eye moment this past week, and have some Oppo tacos. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I took the day trip out to Yokohama on Wednesday, and I had the pleasure of speaking with Bay Stars right-hander Andre Jackson. So before I even talk about him, two things. At Yokohama Stadium, the pitchers, as in most stadiums, they work out pregame in the outfield under that canopy net that protects them from the batted balls. And there's an exit out there at Yokohama Stadium from which or through which these players can leave the field and get back to the locker room or the clubhouse. And they don't have to pass by the reporter pen, which we are now stacked or clumped together in a bullpen in front of the Yokohama Bay Stars dugout. And there are actually there were three sections or three divisions to this bullpen. And I was in the middle one, not the one furthest down the line toward the outfield. But I did see Andre. His hair is flopping around from under his hat, and he's unmistakable. He was wearing short pants. He was getting ready as he usually does his routine and whatever, but I did see him leave through that auxiliary, if you will, exit. And so I didn't get a chance to say, hey, I'd like to get 5 minutes with you today. So at the time, I had already talked to Tyler Austin, and we were talking about the foul ball that he chased into the camera well. And he said he actually thought he had broken every bone in his wrist when he went in there, and he went running off. So he was surprised that he wasn't injured. And he said his wife kind of was mad at him for taking that kind of risk. And I said, hey, man, I don't want to speak out of place, but you know, think about the next play. And he said, no, it's true. I should do that. But so he went and hit. So when Tyler was finished hitting, I said, you know what, Tyler, can you do me a favor? Andre disappeared through the auxiliary exit. I didn't even get a chance to ask him if I could talk to him. I asked one of the PR guys, and you know, PR guys in Japan could be as useful as a pimple. And you can't pop them either. So.
Oh, but we so want to. Sometimes.
Oh, but you so want to. This is ripe for the popping in more ways than two. So I said, Tyler, I'm sorry to, you know, ask you this, but would you mind going in the back and asking Andre if he could come out just for 5 minutes so I could do a chat with him? And I tell you, Tyler was beautiful. He said, oh, sure, no problem. And he went back and he came out and reported. He said, look, Andre's doing his bike ride right now. He'll be out in about 5-10 minutes. And I said, thanks, man. I appreciate it. So big assist for this interview goes to Tyler Austin, who is in the midst of a hitting streak, 22 games, I believe, consecutive games with a hit. And he did it with a home run tonight on Saturday. So that's awesome. But big assist to him. And I was in a panic because I had prepared questions for Andre and Anthony Kay, but I didn't see Anthony out there at all. And I wasn't sure if he was there or not. I guess, you know, I had them both. It wasn't really no plan A or plan B. It was whoever I could see first. So I did see Andre and I knew he was there. And so anyway, Tyler was awesome. He was like a point guard setting up the whole play, and we got an alley-oop dunk because Andre killed it in this interview. It was a great chat. And let's hear what he has to say.
So we're here with Andre Jackson of the Yokohama Bay Stars. Nice to finally meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too, man.
All right, so you have had an interesting journey in baseball, starting out as an outfielder and then moving over to the mound.
Right.
How did that come about?
Yeah, a little bit of opportunity. Growing up, I kind of did everything.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And Ohtani is showing us you can still do it on a bigger level if they let you.
Yeah, I was trying to be like Ohtani, right? And then I ended up having Tommy John, and then kind of having to choose to, kind of got chose for me pitching mm-hmm. life, and got drafted, and kind of started the journey of just being a pitcher only, and here we are.
So how was your first start in MPB? Because I remember you got the win, and I remember you being a guy who with the Dodgers. I'm a Dodger fan, so I saw you pitching. I saw you debut with the Dodgers and everything. Right. You have a lot of movement on your pitches and everything. Right. But how was that? How was that first? Not out in here.
It was great. I mean, it was in the Dome in Osaka. It was really loud. Hanshin Tigers got the good fans. So definitely was like had some nerves, which was awesome. You feel something, pumping me up. And, the game's a lot different here. But at the end of the day, it's still baseball. So it was a good experience.
Yeah, we've been talking about how different the game is and all the ways that these little batters get the bat on the ball, no matter what you seem to do. But what did that do for you, that good start out? Here, do you try to put that away quickly, or do you just focus on, trying to build on that?
Yeah, I was trying to. After that first outing, kind of went a little south for the first month. First few outings was different strike zone here, different approach from the hitters, different swings. So probably took me about another 4 or 5 outings to figure out, my approach against these guys. And then from there, it's just kind of building off each outing.
Now, do you kind of compare your major league debut with your MPB debut?
I mean, I think preparing, having the MLB debut, definitely prepares you for anything, so it's like the pinnacle of being nervous in baseball, right? So it's like anything after that, you get that out of the way, anything, you can handle anything, or at least you've done it before. So, but definitely had some nerves. Like I said, that crowd was not something you're used to, never pitching a dome before. So, don't understand what anybody's saying. it's a lot of different, you have a lot of different thoughts, and so it was interesting.
You had never pitched in a dome before that?
Never, yeah.
Huh. I start thinking about it. You don't have them on the minor league stage in the States, and then you got to get to a dome stadium.
Yeah, I think the closest thing is a retractable roof. The D-backs had, I pitched there, so.
Yeah. And it was probably open.
It's probably open.
All right, now, what has been different in recent starts? Because I noticed a little bit of difference in you. Things have seemed to, calm down, slow down, something down for you.
For sure. Slow down. Understand my approach against the guys. I won't give away my secrets, but
we don't ask those kind of questions.
I definitely slowed down. I understand the game style here a little bit better. Understand their attack, and if you're able to throw strikes early in counts, you're going to be successful. And I wasn't doing that to start.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. Now I remember your debut and some of the pitches that you made as a Dodger, and your ball's just moving all over the place.
Right.
And it seems like I'm not seeing as many pitches with that kind of movement on them here. Now, what's the difference between Dodger Andre and MPB Andre that you can share with us?
Yeah, no, I think I've added new pitches, but I think it's more of refining like the misses. I used to spray the ball a bit more around.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're seeing a little more refined,
mm-hmm.
where I'm not trying to chase as many strikeouts here. You're not going to get as many strikeouts here, so you do have to pitch to contact more. So not smaller batters too. So maybe a little bit, you see a little bit less spray. That's probably what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you and Anthony and Rowan, you guys are working as a trio of new foreign players here, right, trying to learn about MPB on the fly. How's that going?
It's good. I mean, like I said, like it's a big adjustment. Everything's different, and then your brain's trying to compute like what's being said, and something about baseball is probably nothing new, but just being able to communicate with teammates, being able to communicate with the coaches, so everybody's on the same page, is kind of what it took a couple months for them to learn us to learn them, and then now we're able to kind of do our thing. So
Yeah, there's definitely new approaches. You say you haven't learning, you're not learning anything new, or you're just learning a new approach that I know you can't share everything with us, but
no,
you're just learning.
No, I'm learning. I'm hearing a new language every day. It's different. They, you know, approach the game different. They approach practice different. They approach, and different's not bad. It's just different than what we're used to, right? So it's like, you know, trying to learn how we can incorporate what we've done to get here and be a good teammate at the same time and, be, there for the team when you need it. So, for us, it's adapting. We have to adapt to the game here because there's certain things that, you know, you can't chase the punch out. You know, there's a strike zone blower. There's certain things that I would do that weren't working. So eventually you got to make an adjustment.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Now, there's a lot of controversy about the MLB baseball itself. Guys are not able to use as much sticky stuff as they had in the past. How do you find the MPB baseball compared to the MLB baseball?
A lot more grip, for sure. I think MLB baseball, get deep in that bat or something, you'll lose a little bit of grip. And also, there's a lot of different climates all over the U.S. than mm-hmm. there is in Japan.
Sure.
So the consistent climate here is also nice for the ball.
Didn't think about that.
It's humid. The ball is already tackier. And the MLB, you're playing in LA, Arizona, you're playing in Colorado, you're playing in all these different states. The ball's different in every state. So. That's a big part of it, and that's why I think guys refer to sticky just to have a consistent feel on the ball.
Sure, yeah.
I think there's a middle ground for sure, like between if it's sticky stuff or if it's just a tackier baseball, just something that, or a unified substance that pitchers could use. The rosin's a lot better now. The rock rosin in MLB, but here I haven't had a problem with the grip of the baseball at all,
and it's a little bit smaller, right?
Yeah, I think the seams are bigger,
mm-hmm.
So it feels smaller,
mm-hmm.
but you have a little more seam to grab onto, so.
All right,
yeah.
All right, last question. Yeah. You're on a team with a manager who is a former pitcher,
yeah.
So how's the communication and the process with Mueller?
Yeah, I think he understands, what pitchers need, and he can kind of understand in the game, when you're going well and when you're not going well. So I feel like he makes pretty good decisions as far as, pitching changes and understanding his pitchers, because he's been there, he did it for a long time, and he kind of lets me do my thing, and I appreciate that. And he's been there to watch bullpens, kind of pick up what I'm trying to work on, and give advice when he can, and it's been helpful.
All right, well, I'm always rooting for my Dodger guys, so I'm rooting for you.
Appreciate you.
All right, thanks.
All right, first year pitcher in Japan. We've gone through down this road a million times, you and I.
Indeed.
Yeah, other than the little popping sounds that I got through an iPhone recording, which I've never heard before, what did you find interesting about this chat?
Oh, tons. I really enjoyed it for a couple of reasons. And I thought the questions were really good. And I really enjoyed his, especially talking about managing his approach to Japanese baseball.
Mm.
And on a real simple level. Well, one is, of course, really interesting comment was not chasing punch outs.
Yes.
Okay. Now, and all I got to say is, sorry for all the you-knows, I'm trying to prove that I'm actually from California, I think. I don't normally do that much. I know, dude, how grody. No, what I'm trying to say is that because every pitcher is different, every pitcher has expectations and pitches that move a certain way, and then they get the balls a little different and they have to manage that, and the mounds are a little different and they have to manage that. And then of course they come into contact with the, the Japan's little, I guess we could call them pocket monsters.
Pocket monsters.
These little tiny left-handed hitters.
Okay.
Who basically their job is to look for anything sort of on the outside corner so they can slap it over the third baseman's head and either for a single or a double if it's close enough to the line, or a foul ball.
Mm-hmm.
And just really cut at the ball, not really swing at it, but more just sort of deflect it. And this was another Jackson, Jay Jackson, who alerted me this and sent me down an incredibly profitable rabbit hole to learn about those kinds of hitters, which I really was not aware of what a big deal that was. But anyway, he said, you know, Jay Jackson said, I tried to throw my two seamers to these guys. He said it was, you know, he said it was like putting them on a tee. Because they weren't trying to hit, they weren't trying to drive the ball. They were just waiting for something in the zone that they could flick.
Yep.
You know, they were practically bunting, trying to bunt them over the third baseman's head.
Yep.
And so that was a pitch for him to take care of guys with big swings. And so he had to adjust that way. And I could hear Andre Jackson. I'm guessing what happened was the pitches that he was expecting to get strikeouts with in the States.
Get chases with, yes.
Yeah, yeah. That he was going to get people to chase with in the States weren't working. But we have seen pitchers who come here, and of course the Miles Michaelis one is the famous example, a guy who had pretty much no control in the States, and he was a pitch-to-contact guy in the States, came over here and said, I can expand the strike zone. And he did it because he learned that batters so want to make contact that you can get them to chase the ball out of the zone. You can eventually get them out of the zone going for pitches that they had no chance to hit. So there's always a way, and every player's different. So I really enjoyed that part of it because it, you know, brought me back to that story. But the other thing that I really enjoyed was virtually for every question, there was a, you could see that he was thinking about it on multiple levels. So especially, you know, what clued me into this was I'm trying to figure out the game. I'm trying to adjust and adjust my approach and my pitches at the same time as being a good teammate. He saw all these things, or I shouldn't say he saw, but he certainly communicated that all these small things are interlinked, which they are. You know, it's not just baseball. It's just not being a part of the team. It's doing lots of things. I'm not necessarily doing lots of things, but certainly being aware of lots of things. And he struck me as being extremely self-aware of where he was and the different connections. And I got that with, you know, talking about Daisuke Miura too. I felt that was the same thing. You know, there's this level, there's that level. There's the game level, there's the other level. So I was flat out impressed.
Yeah. I mean, that was the same thing with me about the chasing strikeouts and pitching more to contact. And I thought that was huge because we got to look at that on Friday at Koshien against the Tigers. He went 6 scoreless innings. He allowed 3 hits and had a couple walks. He hit a batter. He did a, I'm going to call it a Sasaki. He hit a batter because Roki is plunking. He's throwing, he's plunking. And he only had 3 strikeouts. And I think his biggest strikeout was getting Koji Chikamoto in the 5th inning with 1 out and a runner on 3rd, a big RBI situation at that point in the game. And he did go out of the zone and got him to chase. And I thought that was impressive. And but let me also say this about Andre. He was so friendly, and not that many of the import players aren't, but before I could even get a question out, he was asking me, you know, where are you from? And he was generally interested in my story as well. And I think, again, it was refreshing, but again, I think we see this situation, this phenomenon in which the players, the import guys are coming to Japan and they don't get interviewed that often. They don't get bothered. Yes, if they make a mistake, the reporters want to talk to them on the negative. And yes, if they have a game-winning instance, whether it's a hit or they get the last out and, you know, have a great game on the mound, do something great to contribute on the mound, everybody wants to talk to them. But just on a random day, getting an interview like that, I think these guys are happy to do it. They really are, because that's part of the job. I think that's part of something that they have been used to. You know, you do your media availability, you go and do your practice, and then you pitch, and then you do more media. And then, you know, that's part of the schedule. And I think when these guys see us and they have an opportunity to talk, they're glad to do it. So, but I thought also the climate factor that Andre discussed when it comes to the consistency of the ball. And I think it's not just the tackiness of the ball. It's not just the weather conditions that we think about. And as he was talking to me and saying those things, I started to think there's so many variables for why a pitcher looks really good one day on this mound against this lineup. And then the next day that he pitches, he doesn't look the same at all. And then you start to factor in, okay, well, now they're on the road. He got less sleep. Maybe they're pitching on a different mound. It's a little colder today. It's drier. You know, Andre talked about the fact that we have all these climates in the States, but there are differences in Okinawa as opposed to Hokkaido as well. And so he's talking about all these things that can be variables. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. The mound's different. The ball feels different. The lineup you're pitching against is different. You feel different. There's so many things. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. You're nodding your head as I'm talking.
Yeah, my problem was that I had the notes on my computer. And when I was listening to the podcast, when I was listening to your interview originally, the first time I listened to it, I didn't have it on my notes. Then my notes open. So I did remember. I remember the bit about the climates and things. And I've had, a half dozen Japanese pitchers say, right. What went wrong with you in your first spring training? I couldn't grip the ball because it was Arizona.
Yeah.
And Koji Uehara, you want to hear a story. Koji Uehara basically was acquired by the Boston Red Sox for nothing, for spare change, and became the most effective closer in the American League because he had trouble gripping the balls at the Rangers ballpark at Arlington. And they released him.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I totally understand it. And, you know, we're talking different everything and different amounts of humidity really can be a big difference. I was surprised that Andre didn't talk about the fact that the ball in the U.S. can be more erratic with the ball and the feel. And he did say, he did mention the idea of, or the notion of having a uniform tacky substance in MLB that everybody can use besides the rosin. And then they don't have to do any checks. Maybe I'm supposing that would be the result of that. But I thought finding that consistency and thinking about all these pitchers and how they develop consistency when there's so many things that are fluctuating, I thought that was really interesting. That was really what got me in terms of what he said. So those two things, but really a fun chat. And I like the whole thing. I'm probably going to listen to it again when I do the editing just to hear him talk, because it was really fun.
Thank you.
And in terms of the Bay Stars now, obviously we are missing Shota Imanaga, and he had been really tearing things up in the majors early on. And I think he's kind of not flattened out, but leveled out a little bit over there.
Sure.
But the Bay Stars don't look like they miss him as much. They're getting some, I would say, unanticipated, maybe is a good word, pitching performances from some pitchers. And the other night it was Kentaro Taira.
Sure.
An 11th year crafty righty. Remember, I like to use the term crafty righties because nobody says it. They only give that moniker to the lefties. And I'm like, why are they the only ones who get it? You never hear crafty writer, or maybe
because
crafty
more,
veteran.
Well, because there's more right-handed writers than there are left-handed writers.
But nice. But yeah, he threw his first, Taira did, threw his first career shutout on Thursday, and he beat the Yakult Swallows 3-0 and survived the tying run at the plate. The tying run was at the plate in the ninth inning with two outs, and he got through it. So kudos to him. But it seems like the whole rotation is functioning well, considering a guy like Imanaga is gone. What are you seeing with the Bay Stars?
Well, I see that, and I see that, I don't know, picking up where they left off last year, they've been relatively stable. Toshiro Miyazaki's having, he had a career year last year, and he's nearly as good this year, although he did miss two or three weeks.
Mm.
But he's been good, and Shugo Maki is Shugo Maki. and the Yudai Yamamoto, the catcher, is fine, and it's basically the rest of it is your typical. Oh, and Keita Sano's been
when he's in the lineup, yeah.
Yeah, he's been kind of back to his normal self. So you've got the and they've it's taken Daisuke Miura a couple of years for him to figure out that no matter how many times he figures Yasuaki Yamasaki has solved his problems, that he's basically a time bomb waiting to go off, and he really shouldn't be in the ninth inning of close games, but starting the eighth or the seventh or something and see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So he's got that, and Kohei Morihara has settled into that. I mean, we've seen some weird stuff. We saw, of course, Yuito Mori making a start in Interleague against the Hawks, which was fun. But, and I like
everyone with a bat.
Yeah, true enough. I like Mori, but he's hasn't really been the same since he hurt his non-pitching hand. You know, that's basically he had some. I don't know what it is, and I'm guessing it was a nerve issue or something in his left hand, and he has not been the same. So, anyway, no, I the Bay Stars have been consistently, and when I guess what I meant to say was that aside from this cast of characters, you could take them and the Yakult Swallows and the Oryx Buffaloes and the Cebu Lions and take on any given day, you could take three of their starting players and plug them into the other team and you wouldn't know the difference. It's role players, utility players,
part-time players. Yeah.
And Shinosuke Abe with the Giants is kind of playing with that too.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at some of the numbers, and you see the Bay Stars have a 2.98 ERA in overall with their pitchers, and then you see the batting, and that 2.98 is second highest in the league. It sounds good, but with the ball being the way it is, and Jim laughing. And
I'm laughing because I'm laughing.
I'm not calling it dead, but it's
okay.
It's fluttering. It's a flutter ball. Let's put it that way. And but they're hitting 250, and that's the highest, you know, among Central League teams. That's pretty high as a team to be batting 250. And they're hitting enough home runs, and they're scoring enough runs, but they're just not still a great defensive team. And here they are. I think Yakult has 269 runs to lead the Central League. And then there are the Bay Stars second with 256. But they give up a lot, too. They do have a plus-minus differential of plus at the moment, plus four as we're speaking here. And they hit 46 home runs. That leads, that's second in the Central League. Of course, the Bay Stars in Jingu Stadium. But so their stats, and what I'm thinking is, if you adjust for the ballparks and figure out all those things, their stats are pretty middle of the road. They're not leading per se, but they're playing good enough defense to stay in these games. Even tonight, they lost 2-1 to the Tigers, but they stayed in the game. Now they're not making, I shouldn't say too many or obvious defensive mistakes. They do have a lot of errors, but again, I'm not errors. For me, are just guys maybe sometimes either not paying attention or trying to do too much, and so
dying to do too much, or just trying to make the plays, extending it. You know, I mean, sometimes trying to do too much, but also sometimes just a natural function of extending themselves.
Yeah. So, 47. That's second most in the Central League. The Tigers have made 51. This is prior to the last game of the night. So we're actually taping while there's a game going on. The Giants are leading 4-1 at Jingu Stadium over the Swallows. But I still like the team. And, you know, the standings say the Bay Stars are a second place team at the moment. That is fun. I'm sure our buddy Michael Westbay is happy about that. But I'm just concerned that if this is a playoff situation, they just don't have enough. They have a lot. They're exciting, but they're missing another arm or a high level arm coming into the rotation to shut the other team down. They're missing a couple guys in the bullpen. We talked about JBW last year, JB Wendelken. Yes. And that kind of shut down situation in the bullpen is still worrisome. So I think I'm looking at the team and I'm thinking something needs to get better, something needs to improve before I'm willing to say, okay, you're a good, strong second place candidate for second place, maybe even the league title, but there's some holes to fix. And we know that Yoshitomo Tsugo had to be deactivated because he has a fractured rib.
Stress fracture in one of his ribs. Yeah, I don't remember which side.
Yeah. So that's part of the reason he hadn't been hitting recently. And he really kind of dropped off. We saw him do good things early on, but then, like I said, dropped off. And yeah, so that's my concern about this team, that it's masquerading as an actual contender. But until these...
The thing is, the whole Central League's kind of like that. I mean, it's they're like the six Central League teams are like
I'm gonna push back against that because I think with the Carp with their pitching and the Tigers with their rotation, those two teams right there, and even the Giants can be included because they have three strong pitchers in the rotation who can in a playoff situation. I'm not going to worry about them. I think that you're going to get a good game. The other teams, you might get a good game from the pitchers here and there, but they can't score enough runs or there's some fatal flaw. The Dragons cannot score runs at all. The Yakult Swallows can't prevent them.
All these teams have fatal flaws. Some of them just have more than others.
Right, right.
What okay. I'm saying is there's no – if you took the six Central League teams and you put them in the Pacific League teams, they'd fit really well in second to sixth. I mean, let's look at it. They're and just looking at wins and losses. Mm-hmm. Okay, if the Lotte Marines are in second place in the Pacific League, they gain a game on the SoftBank Hawks. They're still farther from first place than the Yakult Swallows.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just this huge gap. I mean, we've got one team that's basically complete in Japan. And then we've got a bunch of other teams with lots of parts. And, you know, you can argue about the managers and we know people are hurt. We know, you know, every team's got their issues. But I don't see the quality. I mean, I see the quality in all these teams, but I don't see it overwhelming. I mean, the Giants, obviously, you look at the players and you go, how come they're only two games over 500? And I don't know the answer to that.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. It's because they're just inconsistencies everywhere, and including the lineups. You know, guys are in one day and out the next.
That seems to be the fad. Yeah. You know, it's that it's like that in the shallow outfields, you know, that's it's sort of the thing to do now. Bunt, yep. Bring in the outfield, change three players in the lineup every 2 days.
Let's move over to the Pacific League and talk about the Fighters. So I'm looking at this team and it's playing well. The team has been a nice surprise as a Pacific League contender, but I want to start thinking about the long-term sustainability and the level of play. And one of the things that pops out to me is the fact that skipper Tsuyoshi Shinjo is playing three catchers every night on his infield. And I brought this up before.
Well, that's what that sort of came. I think that was part of his contract. I mean, the fighters for years have basically cornered the market on amateur catchers and then found out which of them, you know, amateur catchers who can hit, and then decide where they should play that isn't catching.
Well, they say, hey, you want to squat? You want to be a squatter? Go squat at third. Go squat at first.
I mean, that's what's happening. Kensuke Kondo was a catcher, and then he was a third baseman, and then he was an outfielder. And, you know, this is
now he's
going
about to be MVP. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, that's how the Fighters roll.
Well, I'm starting to look at some of the games. And of course, today it was Yuya Gunji again, making an error at third that helped open, I wouldn't call it a floodgate, but there was a little bit of leakage and that led to some runs. And he has been out there making his share of mistakes at third. Ariel Martinez,
sure.
Has been at first base and not catching. I mean, they're hard plays to make, but they're just less polished. That is not the area of polish for some of these defensive. I mean, you can stick a guy there and he can be adequate. he can catch most of the balls that he should catch, but there's going to be one or two, and they seem to come at the worst possible times, you know, two outs and a runner at third, and somebody throws a ball low and he can't come up with it.
We certainly remember them at the worst possible, and they come at the worst possible times. Now, yeah, and it is a thing, and I watched Toshiki Abe, who's a player I love, and he's basically been a second baseman most of his career, but last year he did, the Eagles tried him out about 15 or 16 games in left field, and he's played a few this year, and you know, he went to make a, he caught a ball, and when on the follow through, the ball flew out of his glove, and I'm going, oh my goodness, it's like watching the Fighters is the first thing I thought. But the fighters have had this thing going. One part of when they hired Tsuyoshi Shinjo, my first thought was, besides, why is he wearing these clothes? Because he's Shinjo. But my second thought was, this guy could be really good. He could be really good for a lot of young players who have small flaws in their game. Mm-hmm. Because Japan is a fault-finding society where when somebody wants to move past you, all they do is point at the things you make mistakes on.
Mm.
I make fewer, you know, I can't hit, but I can catch the ball at third base. So I should play instead of the guy who hits 303, you know, who has a 350 on base percentage because his arm is not good enough, you know, or he made an error. You know, that's the way it works, is they pick on flaws. And often the picking and the endless nitpicking and ratting out people for inconsequential things, you know, to prove that they're not all-round players.
Right.
Is often ways for sometimes for coaches to pay their bills. You know, you know, this is like, you know, they've got to pick one player or the other. Well, let's get the guy who made the error. And Shinjo was different because he was a guy who was going to say, you guys go play and do the best you can and show me what you can do. Mm-hmm. And he was very positive in that outlook. And I think we saw last year the benefits of not harping on players making mistakes because they were trying to do better,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they were learning. But so that was the good thing, is I think he had a huge impact on a couple of players, particularly Chusei Manami, because he wasn't going to pick on what he couldn't do, but let him play and figure out on his own how he needed to play. Right. And that's really helped him. And a few other players as well.
Shun Mizutani, I don't know how much, Shun Mizutani, I don't know how much Shinjo or any coaches have had to do with his breakout situation, but he has broken out for sure, you know, and he's another active player draft guy who came over from
South. A number of players. I mean, you see guys coming from other teams. This is the thing. You see guys coming from other teams where they tend to be a little more regimented, and they come to the Fighters and it's like, oh, you mean my job is to play baseball and not to sort of check my mistakes? So there's that. So I think that's been a really positive thing, and there are limits to how much you can get out of that. But I think that's been a positive thing. But the flip side of that is the Fighters have had this thing under Shinjo to want to see how every player plays at every position. Now, this is normal if they're Oryx. It's sort of the way that organization has, and Lotte to a lesser, or most teams to a lesser degree. Mm-hmm. Oryx is sort of the champion of, well, you can play center field and second base, but how are you at shortstop? You know, because we'll find out. That's how they have Keita Nakagawa, who's was basically a middle infielder, then their shortstop, and then the first baseman, and then
left field, center field. Yeah.
You name it. If you play second base, they're always looking for your next position. And I think Shinjo thought, wow, they're 2-time champions. We should do that too.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah, stop. Anyway, so that's been part of their game, was giving everybody a chance to. But, you know, the good thing is he gives everybody a chance to fail at multiple positions, but he doesn't seem to hold it against them, which is, you know, in
You know, they understand we put you in a bad spot, a situation. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Make the next play.
Yeah, that's the good thing. And I'll tell you the last one. I'm sorry, I've got to give you a, Hiroyuki Nakajima, who was basically an all-star for years and years with the Cebu Lions, and so on. Basically, he was kept out of the starting job with the Cebu Lions for a couple of years because his manager saw him make a couple of errors on a muddy field in spring training when they were training in Kochi Prefecture in like sub-zero temperatures. And that from then on, that manager was Tsutomu Ito, and he wouldn't let Nakajima play. You know, he just forget the guy. He basically didn't want him on the team.
Yep.
So that's how it works. And the fighters are the antithesis of that. Okay, I'm done with that.
My concerns revolve around that situation with the three catchers on the infield. Of course, that wasn't the case tonight. They had a first baseman, I believe, at first base. I just know it wasn't Martinez. But the other concern is about the rotation, because I'm thinking, okay, if we started the playoffs tomorrow and the fighters were in, which I believe they started the day actually out of a playoff spot. They dropped down to fourth. But if they were in the playoff spot and the playoffs started today, I tried to imagine what their rotation would look like. And I guess Hiromi Ito would get game one. I couldn't choose actually between Sachiya Yamasaki and Takayuki Kato, but I think they're both almost the same in terms of results. And then I really couldn't think of anybody else they really want to throw out there. There are a number of guys who are, you know, interchangeable.
And they need four to win the playoffs. They're going to need to get four big games from their at least three big games from their starting pitchers against the SoftBank Hawks. And that's a tall order. And that fourth game is a really tall order. They could do three even. I mean, you know, short series. A lot of, you know, random weird stuff can happen.
So, I mean, I like what they have done. I like what Shinjo has brought to the team this season. He seems to have, like I said earlier, matured. You called it a mute button, whatever it is. He seems to be doing better. We don't see crazy moves and all those sort of things. Players are starting to thrive under his leadership, if we can call it that.
As much as it's no longer about him. Everything's no longer about him.
Yeah. So, and we're anticipating you're going to be out. They're coming to Tokorozawa this week, so you're going to be able to see what goes on the bench on pregame and practice and all that stuff. So, looking forward to that. But let's make a four-seam transition, and it's Oppo Taco time. So we have been talking about opposite field home runs. I saw a couple of home runs recently that surprised me. I guess the more impressive ones in recent memory were the Neftali Soto shots, because he hit a couple, and he hit one at, I don't remember exactly where he hit it because he's hitting so many. I think he hit it at home at the Zoom. No, is that Zoom Zoom? At Zozo Marine Stadium. But
you got to get your Zozos and your Zoom Zooms straight there, man.
He has hit a couple recently, and that obviously got me thinking about them again. But there was one game, I think I talked about it last week, the game between the Dragons and the Tigers, and we saw Teruaki Sato hit a ball pole side that didn't go out, and then we saw Seiya Hosokawa hit a ball opposite way, and it did go out. It did go down the line, but I don't think you get any help from the wind or anything at Koshien going down the line if you're a right-handed batter.
It's short, though.
It's shorter, but still, I mean,
not a right-handed batter, not the right field. I mean, I guess the wind does blow the other way. It famously blows in from Osaka Bay, but not always.
Yeah. So what have you got number wise? Who's leading in opposite field home runs? And
okay, well, let me
start. And have the numbers gone up? I'm sorry, have the numbers gone up since?
Okay. Let's start with the global issue, which is
think global and local. It's one of those green catchphrases.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Exactly. Well, we're going to start by thinking globally, and from 2014 to 2021, before the home runs started to disappear, 15.1% of the home runs in NPB were to the opposite field.
15.1. Okay.
Yes, correct. In the last 2.5 seasons, it's 10.6%.
2.5 seasons?
Yeah, because this year and the previous two.
Got you. Okay.
Yeah, since 2022, basically it's a third of the home runs to the opposite field are no longer going out.
Hmm.
Okay. So there's that. And without further comment, who hits the most opposite field home runs? And if I asked you, you would probably tell me who.
Neftali Soto.
Neftali Soto is correct. 6 of his 9 home runs have been to the opposite field.
And remember, when I did the interview with him earlier this year, I asked him about that specifically. You're hitting the ball the other way a little bit more. And he brought up the fact that he had injured his foot in the offseason and blah, blah, blah. But he also said, I'm trying to hit the ball where it's pitched and make good contact. And I think you definitely see that. That was an easy one.
Okay. The rest of the guys are sort of, I got all the guys with at least 2 opposite field home runs, and there's 8 of them.
Oh, go ahead, hit us.
There's a bunch of guys. Yeah, oh, very well. I'll take you out to the wrong side. Okay. Domingo Santana, 36. He's got 4 opposite field of his 11 home runs, 4 have gone out the other way.
Okay.
Toshiro Miyazaki, 2 of his 6.
Okay.
Minetaka Murakami, 4 of his 15.
Okay.
Kensuke Kondo, 3 of his 13.
Okay.
Seiya Hosokawa and Chusei Manami, 2 of their 9. And last, and not really a surprise because he's pretty much a dead pull hitter, Otaka Yamakawa, 2 of his 13.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Kondo hitting the opposite field. That was another one that kind of left an impression with me, one of his opposite field job. Yeah.
And the other thing I would add is this week, and I don't remember, I want to say it was Thursday night, Teruaki Sato had a couple of home runs.
Mm.
And he said, well, the way the ball has been flying this year, the way as hard as I hit it, I'm surprised it went out.
Yeah, I don't think it was Thursday, though.
It was against the Carp. It might have been Wednesday. 2 home
yes,
runs.
Wednesday.
Okay. The same night, Domingo Santana thought he had a game-tying 2 home. You could see he thought he had it. When you saw that ball rocket off the bat and he's going, his eyes got really big.
Mm.
And then it ended up hitting the wall.
Yeah.
It did lead to a run, but it was not a 2-run home run. But
yeah,
anyway.
Death on the highway there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw, you could see his face. He's going like, what have I got to do? Okay.
Well, yeah.
So that's that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's cool. That's good to know. And so the past 2.5 years down to 10%, that's big. But what's the difference between, is it not so big?
No, I think it is big. And I think what's happening is more balls, of course, the physics of baseball taught me that basically poolside home runs travel farther.
Mm-hmm.
With the same energy.
Much belief here, yes.
Okay. So what tells me is that balls hit to the opposite field tend with the same force do not have the same results. They do not fly as far. They do not carry as far. So if the ball is carrying less, it would have a little more of an impact on opposite field home runs. So I think there's that, and there could be, again, some kind of an adjustment, because every time the context changes, players adjust. They do things a little differently. Managers do things a little different. Sacrifice bunts are way up this year.
Hmm.
Why? Because people aren't hitting home. There's less expectation. Someone's going to pop a home run.
Right. So let's play for that one run even more.
So,
All right. Well, awesome. And next time we will bring this up again. Hopefully we can do month by month. Look at it like that next time too.
All right.
Let's make a 2-seam transition and play everyone's favorite game. Let's guess the top performers of the month. So in my process, I'm going to start with the Pacific League because it's easy. The first thing that popped in my head was Kensuke Kondo. And end of story. I got this one right. I went and looked up the numbers. He hit 413 had a 1290 OPS, 23 RBIs, 7 home runs, an on-base percentage of 516, served a lot of beer, drove people home, made some beds, made breakfast. He did it all.
Don't let me stop you.
He did it
You're
all.
On a roll.
He did it all. And get this, Shohei Mizutani in June hit .333, 3 home runs, 15 RBIs, had a 975 OPS, and he would be good, but good doesn't beat fantastic. So you're out, kid. Who do you have?
Yeah, to add to your list of superlatives, in addition to laundering and ironing the sheets, led the league with all those things that you mentioned. He also led the league with 15 walks and 19 runs.
I didn't give him credit for the walks, but I gave him credit for the on-base percentage.
You did. And the slugging average, .773. So all these numbers are out of this world. And I had some MLB scouts say, boy, we didn't expect to see him coming in the WBC, but we sure wished he hadn't hooked up with a long-term contract with the Hawks because we want him.
Yeah, I bet you do. But you're not going to get him, and you can't have him. Yeah, just like they say in the song. Anyway, so then I thought about pitchers, and I just had to look at the numbers. No one really came to mind for some reason. And then I saw Levon Moinello was 3-0 with a 0.67 ERA over 27 innings pitched. And then Masaru Fuji of Rakuten was at 0.72 ERA over 27 innings pitched, but didn't really have the wins. So I think I'm going to go with Moinello. What about you?
Yeah, same. Led the Pacific League with a 0.67 ERA as well as 34 strikeouts.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's pretty good. Masaru Fuji has impressed me. Basically, his ability to get double play balls.
Yeah.
He had a stretch where he had three, you know, he's pitching only 5 or 6 innings, and he got 3 double plays behind him in 2 consecutive games.
Yeah, but part of that is putting guys on, so I don't think that's a good strategy.
Well, part of that is putting guys on, but he wasn't putting a lot of guys on. He wasn't, I mean, one game he did, but the other game he wasn't. So, okay. I mean, it's you know, if that's what you can do, that's what you can do. I'm not a fan of ground ball pitchers, but, you know, when you got them and they're working, go for it.
There you go. I do want to give Carter Stewart Jr. Honorable mention for his 13 strikeout performance. I'm not sure if it was this month or last month, but whenever it was fantastic. So congratulations to him. And then Chihiro Sumida of the Lions also gets honorable mention. He was 3-1, had a 2.12 ERA for a team with the fewest wins in MPB right now. So that's always impressive when you win 3 games in a month for a team that pretty much wins 4 games a month, or maybe 5. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Natsuki Takeuchi. I mean, he's 5. The kid's what, 6-0 now?
Guy's fantastic. Was that a shutout or a complete game on?
It was a complete game. No, it was not. Game. 8 innings.
Yeah. It should have been a complete game. It seemed like it was because he completely shut them down. Sure. Anyway, what about the Central League? In the Central League, I had thought about the aforementioned Tyler Austin, and then when I looked up the numbers, I think they kind of confirmed it. He hit .346, 28 hits, 5 home runs, 17 RBIs, an OPS of 1,031. He tied for first in home runs with the 5. His OPS was also leading the league. 8 doubles. I think I was right on this one. What about you?
Yeah, same, straight across the board.
However, Elier Hernandez of the Giants and Yoshihiro Maru of the Giants both hit higher. They both hit .352.
Yeah, but nobody's gonna take the guy who hits and say, oh man, you only hit .346 and led the league and all that other stuff, you know?
Well, okay, I'm with you, but
50 or 500, yeah.
I'm with you, but yeah, 31 hits for Hernandez, 32 for Maru.
No, .360, you know, take a seat.
Yeah. All right.
No, they had great. Hernandez had a very good season, and typically he would, like as you said, with Shohei Mizutani, in a typical month he'd be the hitter of the month, but not this month.
All right. What about pitcher? I thought that was an easy one too. Daichi Osada of the Hiroshima Carp, a 0 ERA over 29 and a third innings pitched, and he also threw a no hitter. He only struck out 15, though, during that time.
Well, it's Daichi Osera. He only strikes out, one guy every three innings anyway. So.
Yeah, but I thought Aaron Kuri of the Carp also had a good month, 3-0, 0.39 ERA over fewer innings, 23. And Hiroto Saiki also was 3-1 for the Tigers. That only loss was a 1-0 decision to the Dragons. So I don't know how much I'm going to blame him for that loss. In fact, I think he should just take it off the record. although they did earn the run, the Dragons did. And he had a really good month. And the other thing about Osera is today, the Dragons scored, no, it was Friday, they scored two runs. No, it's today. They scored two runs off of him. And ended his scoreless inning streak at 31 and a third innings consecutive. Wow.
And first home run he's allowed this year.
Yeah, well, it was almost like the first run he's allowed this year, too. I think maybe it was the second. Yeah, the second and third, because nobody's been able to score off of him over four games about. And then the Dragons end up putting a couple runs on the board today. So.
Yeah, I like that, because Yutaro Itayama, who hit the home run off of Osera, I think it was his second home run of the year.
It was his second home run of the year, second as a pro, both off Osera.
Okay. Not
in his career.
Oh, in his career. Okay.
In his career.
That I didn't know. But today's game proved that he can beat some, he can torment somebody besides his former team, the Hanshin Tigers, against who he's hitting like 560 against this year.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I noticed they play him a lot against the Tigers, and they put him in the lineup wherever they can get him in that day, and he produces. So yeah.
That's one thing, with the few teams in the league. One thing I love about Japanese baseball is all the times guys get to play against their former teams and really rub it in. Yuya Gunji had some wonderful games against the Dragons. Kensuke Kondo demolished the Fighters a week ago.
There was one game in Interleague where the Fighters tried to put anyone who had even passed through Nagoya on the field against the Dragons, and they all produced. Yeah, the whole series. It was a nightmare. But I guess it happens. Okay, so so those are going to be really easy. I think those four guys are going to win. You and I have no discrepancies. And what are you saying? Huh? I'm talking about the top performers of June.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Central League pitchers. You haven't asked.
Well, it's Osera.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were making the decision.
I made the decision for you because I didn't want you to get it wrong and count May too.
Yeah. I'm gonna not say something that will get me in trouble with women.
And I'm gonna not say that I know what it is.
Okay. Anyway, no,
I'm not getting in trouble at least.
I basically had exactly the same three guys, but I really didn't know how to match them because I've got Alan Curry with a 0.39 ERA and a Central League best 0.61 WHIP, or Hiroto Saiki, who was 3-1 with a 0.56 ERA and 32 strikeouts and 32 innings.
Yep.
So, I wouldn't be angry. I wouldn't feel disappointed if any of those guys won. Osera will get it because sometimes they'll go, this guy got a no-hitter.
No-hitter, yeah. And a zero ERA in the month, I think.
Yeah, the zero ERA is usually the only time you ever see that is with relievers.
Relievers, I was going to say that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So those two things wrap it up. So I don't know.
I think it's likely, but I liked all those three guys. That was the only category this month where I thought there was really any doubt.
Okay. No doubt. We are moving right along here. And I want to call this segment Stink Eye for the Top Guy. So on Tuesday night.
Yeah, he probably gets that for more than just one player. I think there's a whole segment of the Aichi Prefecture population that would give him a funny
and
look.
Other parts of Japan. My hand raised for that. So I'm watching this game between the Giants and the Dragons on Tuesday night, and it's typical, Dragons struggle for life to get a run. And I did talk to Patrick Newman, and Patrick Newman wanted to be on the show this week, we just couldn't work out a time frame that he could be on. So maybe in the
future. And that's my fault.
No, it's not anyone's fault at all. It was just circumstances, and everybody has families, and he's on vacation. Mm. So, but maybe we'll be able to get him on again another time. But Patrick was also watching this game, and I met up with him on Wednesday. We had some food, and we sat down and talked. And so we were both watching this game. And so the Dragons got a 2-1 lead in the fifth inning. Hiroki Fukunaga hit a 2-run home run, and they're going into their nursing of a 1-run lead. Or even nursing a tie mode, the way the Dragons do. We're not going to really try to score. We're just going to try to prevent you from scoring and frustrate you to death and bore the rest of the country, who, you know, fans who are not fans of our team and really want us to see us get beaten up, which we don't do. We keep games close to make you keep coming back to the game to watch, but we're not going to score to torment you. But anyway, enough about them. Let's talk about the players on the field and how they get along with their manager, because they lefty starter Shinnosuke Ogasawara for the Dragons, who had been pitching really well, allowed a single, and then he hit Gakuto Wakabayashi in the seventh inning with two outs. And after he hit Wakabayashi, Chunichi skipper Kazuyoshi Tatsunami and pitching coach Akinori Otsuka came out of the dugout together. And Ogasawara was just looking. First, he wouldn't look toward the dugout, but he knew that both guys had come out. So that automatically means he's coming out of the game.
Right, because the manager's going to go talk to the umpires. The manager goes to the umpire. He's going to bring him the last towel, his last towel of the game.
Yeah. And so Ogasawara was looking at him like, this little clown is going to take me out of the game. And the look on his face is like, you take yourself out of the game, buddy, forever. Permanently, you know, is what his face said. And he just had this distant stare, and you could see the steam coming out of his ears, his eyes, his nose, every orifice. And now it's
Kazuma Okamoto. Kadoaki was the batter.
Yeah, Kazuma Okamoto had taken Ogasawara to the wall and left to open the inning, and then Takumi Oshiro singled, and then he hit Wakabayashi with two down. So it was probably time for him to come out of the game, but I think Ogasawara was just wanted to get out of the inning. He just had one more out to get, and he thought it was his game. He was in disbelief, and I don't really think he handed the ball to Otsuka. He was upset. He goes and sits in the dugout. First he went and disappeared in the back of the dugout. Then he came back out to the benches, and he, if you can imagine, he balled his fist up with his right hand. And he was sitting in one of the dugout seats, and to the seat to the right of him, with a backhanded fist, he pounded the seat on the side of him a couple times. He was really, really upset.
Three times.
I didn't see three. I just saw two on the broadcast I was watching. But this is.
I think that was he was doing the Tony Orlando song, knock three times. On the bench if you don't want your manager to quit.
So this is something, you know, pitchers here in Japan, they're really compliant. They, you know, they want the best for themselves, but they also want the best for the team, and they just follow authority, and they don't explode at coming out. And we don't see the Trevor Bauer situation where you just turn and throw the ball toward the outfield, center field, and get angry. We don't see that kind of reaction in Japan, but this was as much a reaction as I've really ever seen toward. And everyone could tell it was toward the manager or the situation, the manager taking him out. It might not have been directly at the manager, but he certainly didn't want to come out of this game. And I don't know. I think that that's starting to show some of the cracks there in the relationship between, well, maybe the frustration. Maybe it's more the frustration that these guys, they're pitching their hearts out. The team can barely score. If they get a run, you've got to protect it. If you give up the first run, it seems like the game's going to be over because they're never really going to come back. They don't come back. But he was all smiles, Ogasawara was, after Tatsuya Shimizu got out of the jam with a strikeout. But it was just one of these moments that I really have not seen. And I'm thinking that we're going to see more of them as some of the pitchers, maybe if they give up three runs like Hideaki Wakui did early in the game, they start to say, you know what, I'm feeling kind of faint out here. Somebody get me out of this game. So I don't have to ruin my bullets here. And I think I'm going to faint. Get me out. I've got a heat stroke, you know?
Well, that was Kazuya Ojima who had heat stroke symptoms.
Wakui came out too.
Did he? Okay, I missed
recently.
That.
He had given up 3 runs early in the game, and then about the 5th inning, he's like, you know, this is for the birds.
Yeah, well, that's better than what Toshio Sugiuchi did and broke both his hands punching the hard plastic bench at Fukuoka Dome 1 year.
Yeah, Ogasawara was very careful. His offhand, and he was backhand fist.
The backhand fist is good. No punch in the ice, you know, the cooler.
None of that.
Okay.
But we don't see this. We really don't see this. Remember, one of the things I saw a long time ago was Koji Uehara when he was with the Giants, and they asked him to walk. I guess it was Roberto Pettigini.
Cried.
And he kicked at the mound.
Okay.
He kicked at the mound first. I know the crying, that stuff came later, but an immediate decision was made on the bench. He was kicking at the mound, like, you know, I can get this guy out. But we rarely see this kind of reaction. Maybe some of the listeners can remember some other instances. I really don't. While I try to watch every game, I can't physically watch every game, of course, so I miss some of these things. But that stink eye was I'm just going to keep an eye on that relationship the rest of the way.
Reminded me when I was a Giants fan maybe it might have been the year before I came to Japan, and Frank Robinson was the San Francisco Giants manager, and I was listening to the talk show host, and Frank could be pretty ornery. I can say that from personal experience. He had an edge to him, and when players disrespected him in public, he could show his physical side. And I remember listening to a radio talk show host, and he was talking about how a player had disrespected him. I think it was pitcher Jim Barr. And somebody said, the problem with Robinson is he just doesn't put his foot down. And the radio talk show host, apparently he had gotten physical with one of his players. Doesn't put his foot down. Dude, he puts his fist down.
Gosh, oh no. I'm gonna put you down, bro.
Yeah, he did that as well with Tomohiro Oka. Tomokazu Oka, when they were with them Washington Nationals.
Who did that? Oh, Frank Robinson did?
Frank Robinson, yeah. He popped him one.
Oh, take that, chump.
Chump. Okay.
All right. So we don't have any questions again this week. So hopefully you guys will chime in and give us something else to talk about, some talking points or something you want us to answer or look up or anything like that. You can hit us up on, and it has officially changed, Jim. It is now x.com. If you type in twitter.com, it reroutes you to x.com. So it has changed. Goodness, so hit us up there. At JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or go to the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes. I actually downloaded a new podcatcher, and I actually like this one. It's called Pods. Very simple. And we're on that as well, so you can look us up there, sign up, and listen every week. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks, and I will be at the domed stadium formerly known as Prince on Tuesday. So if you're there, give me a shout.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.